T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Perloff, Zach Edey is now a 2-time unanimous All-American, the Purdue big man. I got to tell you, I've been disappointed by his college career when it comes to the NCAA tournament. Welcome to the show, by the way. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, March Madness upon us. And let me tell you what I mean here. You have a guy in Zach Edey who is probably the most famous college basketball player right now and definitely the most decorated college basketball player right now.
Clearly, on the men's side.
On the men's side,
An important caveat right there.
I know, we have to say that now. We didn't used to have to say that now. We definitely have to say that. Thank you, Caitlin, and thank you, Angel Reese. So he's a Wooden Award winner. He's a Naismith Award winner. He's a 3-time Big Ten Player of the Year. And again, the 2-time unanimous All-American. And that's where the news that came out yesterday, and it really got me thinking. Have we had a multi-time unanimous All-American who has had this disappointing of a college career? And you can win regular season games and that's all good. But let's go back. This is a guy who is this is his fourth year at Purdue, and he's been a 3-year starter. Now, we're not sure what he's going to do in this tournament, but let me just go back through tournaments past. His freshman year, granted, he was not a starter. This was one of the Purdue teams that lost to 13-seeded North Texas in the first round. Mm-hmm. He played 15 minutes in that game. He scored 0 points. Again, he was not a starter, so we'll put that freshman year aside. Sophomore year, Purdue, a 3-seed. They beat Yale. They beat Texas. Lost to St. Peter's, the 15-seed in the tournament. 7 field goal attempts for Zach Edey. He attempted 2 free throws and pulled down 2 rebounds. Then last year, his junior season, loses to 16-seeded Fairleigh Dickinson University. Only the second time that a 1-seed has lost to a 16-seed. On top of that, FDU, Perloff, the shortest team in the tournament. And Zach Edey is 7'4" and like 250 pounds. He has won 2 tournament games in his entire college career so far. We'll see what happens in this tournament. But I'm telling you, a 2-time unanimous All-American, can I tell you some of the other players who have been 2-time unanimous All-Americans? Patrick Ewing, Bill Walton, Larry Bird, Christian Laettner, Tim Duncan. I'll give you Tyler Hansbrough is one of the most recent. Zach Edey is not in this conversation. You can either look at this is the amount of pressure that he's had, or I think so far his college career has been a disappointment.
What's different about Zach Edey and all those names you just mentioned? That Zach Edey's playing in 2024. Take out Tyler Hansbrough. The rest of those guys are 60 years ago. Obviously, I think the fact that he came back and played again is an obvious sign of weakness. And that's why I don't think people are putting those kind of expectations on.
He's a unanimous All-American.
Yeah, right. If he was any good, he would have been in the NBA, right? That's how we view these players. If you come back, will you admit that people think, oh, he can't be that good, he came back? That's why I think everyone knows Zach Edey's not that good, because he's not a huge, he's 7'4" and weighs 300 pounds, is bigger than everybody. And the fact that he's not already in the NBA, I think lowers the expectations on him. Also, dude, we know his backstory a little bit. Last year was a big deal. He didn't learn basketball until really late. It's kind of like Joel Embiid was at Kansas, who is really good, but I don't know if Embiid had any tournament success either. I just think we view this as a different situation. In fact, it's a sign of weakness that he's a second 2-time first-team All-American. Like, if he was a really good first-team All-American, he would have been gone. So I'm not seeing people saying Zach Edey's going to be a huge bust if he doesn't do. Everyone, I think, is pointing to their coach, Matt Painter, because that team that lost in the first round, to St. Peter's, That was the Jaden Ivey disappointment game. Yep. Nobody was mad at Zach Edey. Jaden Ivey, who ended up being
in that game.
Yeah, he scored 9 points. Yeah. He was supposed to be number five overall pick. He was supposed to single-handedly win that game, not Edey. Last year, Edey, obviously, that was a total meltdown. But the other thing, too, is you are discounting this year. What about this year? This is the best Zach Edey we've ever seen. He's learning the game. How do you know he's not going to be good this year?
Well, this is the opportunity in front of him, because if there's another early exit here for Purdue, we can talk about Matt Painter and his future, the coach of the team. But if there's another early exit here, and I'm saying early, like before what, the Elite Eight, there has to be more games won here by Zach Edey, or else I think his career goes down as one of the all-time disappointments. Because you can say, all right, he doesn't have NBA aspirations, or we don't expect him to be really good on the NBA front. But we're talking about college now. And we're talking about every award under the sun is going to this player that is going to be an afterthought when we think about college basketball. You're going to have a guy who's going to be one of the most decorated college basketball players we've seen on the men's side. And he's going to be he's going to not belong on this list.
Right, but that list is not modern. That's old time. Now everybody goes pro. So you're talking about Bill Walton. There wasn't one and done back in 1969.
Right.
So I just don't think, like, we don't view college players the same. You're kind of ignoring the state of college basketball. There just aren't college stars like that anymore. And if you stick around till your senior year, you're obviously not that great a player.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true, because EJ's Gonzaga Bulldogs have had guys who have stuck around a little longer.
Who are not good.
Okay.
Drew Timmy, like, what's he doing in the NBA?
No, not. Hey. But I'm just saying there are, like, if you have these many awards, I should be able to say, and you do stay, and that is different. Shouldn't I be able to say, you can't tell the story of college basketball without this person? And I don't think anyone's saying that about Zach Edey.
Since Tyler Hansbrough, name a player who you has to be part of the college basketball story. That's the college basketball story, in a sense, kind of ended with the modern setup. Now that you can't tell the story of basketball without telling the fact that all the good players go to the G League or in Europe. I mean, it's just a different sport than back then. And that's why I don't think anyone is really waiting. First of all, Zach Edey wasn't a high school star.
Right.
So we never, it's
from
not
Toronto.
Like growing expectations. I actually saw footage last night of him in high school in Florida. He went to IMG Academy. Yeah. I mean, he was learning how to play the game. He was a big, soft kid out of Toronto who played hockey and baseball. It's just different. He didn't grow up without expectations. He wasn't a high school superstar. Yeah. We know the high school superstars. So I think these expectations are coming, but college basketball is different. It's not Patrick Ewing. It's not Ralph Sampson. It's not that kind of big guy. And we know also the big guy cannot dictate the pace in the tournament. Last year, Zach Edey never touched the ball in the last 9 minutes of that loss.
I know.
Because it's a guard-driven tournament.
Okay, but Perloff, a guard-driven tournament, he's 7'4".
Yeah, but there's a bunch of 7-foot guys who are probably going to get knocked out early in this tournament. You can't do much as a 7-footer in this sport anymore.
Then you shouldn't be a unanimous All-American. If you can get fronted by FDU, the shortest team, at some point, you know, EJ had a good line yesterday where basketball is a team sport, but we don't treat it that way. Because if you are a superstar, we expect a lot from you. And Zach Edey is now a superstar and has been because of all the accolades he's getting. And yet there's no impact when it actually matters, which is in the tournament.
Right.
And so to me, it just leaves a lot to be desired with him. And I think it also ratchets the pressure up. If anyone cares, if he cares, I don't know. But it ratchets the pressure up because of the failures of Purdue, number one, recently, and then the failures of him to leave his stamp on this tournament. And that's what this is about. And so just because, like, guys go pro now, I'm talking here now. I'm talking about someone who came back and somebody who's, you know, national player of the year twice, likely. And we can say, wow, college basketball would be the absolute same without him and with him.
I can't even name, go down the list of recent national players of the year. I probably can't name any off the top of my head, because it's not the days of Chris Webber and Bobby Hurley and even Mateen Cleaves and Khalid Al-Amin and all these players. It's not a star-driven sport anymore. Now it's a team-driven sport. Maybe with NIL, that'll come back to that. But who was 2 years ago, who was the player of the year?
I think it was Ochai Agbaji.
Again,
can you
tell the story of college basketball?
He's not a two-time.
And even the big men, it's also a function of centers, too. Yeah. Do we really expect centers to dominate this tournament? There are a lot of tall guys in this tournament, and we're not really looking at them.
No, but
not like the old days. In the old days, it was a center-driven sport. I'm old enough to remember Akeem and Patrick Ewing facing off in the famous tip And that was what the sport was. Now it's not that way at all. There's a ton of seven-footers in this tournament. Nobody's talking about any of them.
Okay, but if you are bigger and now older than everybody, this is like this is the advantage that Edie has. He's bigger and he's older. And
we UConn's pretty old. They have a bunch of 22, 23-year-olds, too.
Well, they've remade the team a bit since last year's championship team. I think that, but that, are we looking at the best player and somebody who deserves all these awards? Or are we looking at the guy who's the biggest and the oldest?
Yeah, I don't think that we're really, I don't view Zach Edey that way. And honestly, the headline, if they lose, who's going down?
Probably Matt Painter, because Edey's going to be gone.
And I think they'll give Zach Edey the benefit of the doubt because of Matt Painter as well. I think there's a lot going on here. By the way, I do think Zach Edey will be a pro, but it's just such a different sport because somehow with a three-point line, people have discovered you can neutralize gigantic inside players. And you just
get Rudy Gobert continues to get big.
Yeah, I know. And the tournament, we saw it last year. You just can front him, let him not get the ball. The guards kind of step up at this time of year to me. So I'm not going to kill him if they lose early. And by the way, they're a number one seed. Virginia lost in the first round and came back and won it all the next year. Let's not count out the Boilermakers completely, Maggie.
Yeah, this is not the day to bring up UVA. They scored about 40 points last night, the first four, which I appreciate because I was able to go to bed.
Yeah, well, just a team like UVA can have the lowest lows and the highest highs. Maybe Purdue will follow in their footsteps. Honestly, the reason they might not, Matt Painter. I don't think it's Zach Edey. I think we're not looking at Zach Edey like that.
Saying, if you told somebody, and don't even say the player's name, don't even say the school, don't say any of that. Say you got somebody who, because of the awards they've gotten, should go down as one of the all-time greatest college basketball players. And they have two wins in the tournament so far and three losses to double-digit seeds. You'd be like, I'm sorry. That something about that does not compute.
But how much of that is some of maybe the bias that Edey has with him being 7'4". Like, it goes back to when you're playing grade school ball, when you see the biggest kid on the court, and you're like, well, of course that guy should dominate, or that girl should dominate. She's bigger than everybody. Like, if Edey had these kind of numbers, these kind of accolades, and his coach was the coach that he is, Matt Painter, who I love as a regular season coach, but he just is not a good tournament coach. Right. Will we really look at them and say, hey, this person really didn't live up to the hype? Or will we say, hey, is Matt Painter who didn't take advantage of the stars that he's been able to develop?
Well, Perloff thinks it'd be more about Painter. I think at the player also has to take, we'll see what he does in this tournament. That's what I think is a lot of pressure on him if he actually, does want to be remembered as one of the great college basketball players. If he doesn't, then who cares? But for people who love the sport and people who want to say, wow, like this is somebody who, if you want to put the plaques up on the wall, looks like they are dominating and you don't see dominance. Now, to be fair, he's really improved his footwork. He's got some soft touch around the basket. There are things that he does really well. I get that. But in this sport, I think you're judged a lot by what you do in the tournament.
Honestly, I think Jaden Ivey. To me, Jaden Ivey was a bigger disappointment because that team had the path to go all the way, and he was a truly great player. Like, he was clearly going to be a future pro, where Edey is a little different to me. Edie's one of these big guys. By the way, if you look, you're talking about the story of college basketball. The Men's College Player of the Year has become a bit of an anonymous award. Just a definition of, because you stick around and you're bigger and stronger, you're not, the outstanding players are leaving. Zach Edey, Oscar Tshiebwe, Luke Garza is very similar to Zach Edey. Luke Garza did, and also I don't think he did much in the tournament either at Iowa. Obi Toppin, who didn't get a chance. Frank Kaminsky won it, Doug McDermott, the guys who
Kaminsky
I don't think
went to the final.
Yeah, but I mean, you could tell the story of college basketball very easily without my guy, Frank Kaminsky. I love Frank, but
Frank the Tank.
I'm just saying, like, the story of college basketball is that the days of Bill Walton and the men, people you were talking about, Patrick Ewing and Ralph Sampson, the gigantic superstar college basketball players, that's not a thing anymore. Is it? I mean, when's the last big, big star? I think it might have been Tyler Hansbrough, who you mentioned.
Well, Zion won in 2019.
Right, but 1 year and done, and he did nothing in the tournament.
Yeah, it went to Lee 8, I think.
If you're here, if you're staying, if you are bigger than everybody, if you, he's different than those guys. He should be the only thing we talk about in college basketball. This should be his tournament. It's not going to be.
Right, but the reason why we're not talking about him, I feel like, isn't, some of it is him because I don't think his style of play is very, appealing to the eye. But some of it is also because I don't think anybody believes in his team.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's so much of a him thing. Because Matt Painter has had other players. He's had Robbie Hummel. He's had Jaden Ivey. He's had other star players that we all thought, all right, this is the time. Purdue's going to finally do it. And Carson Edwards. And for some reason, they just can't do it. And I think part of the reason why we all kind of said, okay, 29 wins, we're not paying attention, who cares, is because we kind of penciled Purdue to win 29 games a year. And then not just like not make the Final Four.
Flop.
Yeah. Flop in the Sweet 16, flop in the second round, flop in the first round. So some of the stuff of, you know, kind of if a tree falls in the forest, do we see it with Zach Edey, I think is because we just don't believe in the Purdue program.
And also, I don't think we believe in big men anymore. Is anyone looking at their bracket and say, wow, they got the better center? All I hear is guard play, and wings and three-pointers. We don't expect the center to win, do we? And in the NBA, it's the same way. Stupid Wemby.
UConn had a good front court and a big front court last year.
But that's definitely not why we like them, I don't think.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Zach Edey, has he been a disappointment in his college career? You are welcome to weigh in. I say yes. Perloff says it's more about Matt Painter in the Purdue program. I think you and EJ are kind of aligned on that one.
I think that'd be an interesting poll, but it's kind of hard to put out because we don't know what's going to happen. So how would you word that?
Up until this point. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to win that one.
I don't think so. I don't think you're going to win that one.
Okay.
I don't think people view Zach Edey as a disappointment. He's kind of a Cinderella story because he learned the sport, you know, in real time in front of our eyes. Yeah, I mean, and you're right. He's going to be 2-time Naismith Player of the Year. That's a disappointment?
I mean, he's got 2 tournament wins and 3 losses to double-digit seeds. You lose to FDU.
Put it up there, EJ.
Lose to 2 double-digit seeds from New Jersey. That is a rough look.
I mean, that's the story of the NCAA tournament in recent years. Those little New Jersey teams are beating everybody.
I know. I mean, Princeton last year, right?
Kentucky's been losing all those teams, too.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. You're welcome to weigh in. Something really kind of snuck up on us this morning. We'll get to that in a moment. I was taken off guard.
What?
I'll tell you in a minute.
I have no idea.
Hold tight. Maggie and Perloff, again, you're welcome to join the show. 855-212-4CBS. We say good morning to our CBS Sports Radio affiliates. We appreciate you so much. You can always listen to us on the absolutely free to download Odyssey app. It's crystal clear. Sirius XM channel 158. And if you'd like to watch the show where Perloff and I are almost matching today, not fully matching, almost matching. So we're back on our schedule.
It's a little Navy versus black situation.
Yeah. Come and watch us. YouTube.com/CBS Sports Radio, twitch.tv/CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back to Maggie and Perloff. All right, Maggie, you teased a big surprise. What did you come in today and were shocked to see?
Well, let's go.
He is the most amazing man in baseball. Here is what Shohei Ohtani did today.
Playing baseball. For real. Totally snuck up on me that today is actually opening day. Happy opening day, Perloff.
No, I don't count this. This is like the first 4 in college basketball. This is not opening day.
Happy opening day, everybody.
Nope.
They're playing actual baseball that actually counts today. It's in Seoul, South Korea. Ohtani's already 0-for-1, but took a couple good hacks, good cuts. It's baseball season. It's here.
No,
this counts.
Not. It does not. It might count in the standings, but anybody who counts as real baseball, this is ridiculous. And it shows why baseball is lame now. Can you imagine if the NFL started 2 weeks before in some other continent? Come on.
Wait a minute.
Come on, baseball. The opening day, you should keep it sacred and have it like be a big deal. Not start a week early.
Your team is opening the season in Brazil.
What? It's not even the first game, though. It's a Friday.
Yeah. Isn't it the first game?
No, I think it's Thursday is the first game, and then they're playing Friday.
Okay, it's the first weekend. The Eagles' home opener is technically happening in Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
Different continent, same exact thing.
That's the Friday. There's a Thursday game, then there's Friday, then there's Sunday. At least it's all opening weekend. This is a week before. I remember playing fantasy baseball and how annoying this was. This is lame.
Opening day.
Does anyone else here view this as opening day?
Absolutely not.
Opening day. We should get some hot dogs. Dexter's here. Let's
no excitement
get
for
it's
this.
Not.
None. Can we drink beer on the air? No. It's a little early.
If you view this as opening day, then you've given up on baseball.
Guys, we came in. Amy Lawrence had the sound up playing the national anthem, like, you know, just for the pride of it.
No, I can't do this. Like, they're gonna play more spring training games after this.
Well,
how does that make any sense?
Because the time difference.
You're gonna play a regular season games, 2-3 games that count to the regular season.
Yeah.
And then you're gonna go back and play. The Dodgers got three more games in the spring training schedule against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, or now they're just LA Angels. Like, no, EJ, this is not. This is not.
It's baseball. You got to stay in a rhythm. You can't just take a week off.
No,
that's how you lose the World Series.
Then they should keep playing. They should be the only. They should play a 6-game set. They should play in Korea. Then they should come back and they should play more regular season games. Their spring training should be over.
You know,
they can't go back and play exhibition. That's like almost getting like a mulligan. You say, oh, you know what? We don't like how we played in those first three games of the season. Let's get some more practice.
Work out the kinks. You know, this is kind of reminds me a little bit of we were really lucky to go on our honeymoon to Thailand, and it was great. It was amazing. It was a trip of a lifetime. But in retrospect, we should have hit a couple other countries while we were over there, because how often are you going to be in that part of the world?
Yep.
You're right. They should have done a little bit of a tour here. Start in Seoul, maybe go do some games somewhere else.
Yeah.
Really make it count.
It's a division rival, so you got to play this team a couple times anyway. Play two series. You can't go back to playing, or you should just be done. You cannot go back to spring training. That is ridiculous.
Happy opening day, everyone.
Yeah, you can't.
Back up the hot dog
cart. You can't start and go back to spring training.
Does the NBA do this too? I feel like they have some meaningless international games.
They do international games, but they don't have it where you're playing a regular season game and they're going back to preseason.
It's in the middle of the season.
And usually they're in the middle of the season. They've been playing games in Mexico City recently, and they usually do every year a game in London. The Nets play there a lot for some reason, and the Pistons do too. But that's usually like January.
They do a lot of preseason over there too.
Yes.
Preseason was in Abu Dhabi this year.
Yep. Correct. Yeah, they'll do those.
And they've gone to China for preseason, right? Or
Yes.
Because I think there was an issue
preseason.
There where
keyword preseason. Like
Pete,
this.
Pete, you wanted to say something about this.
Oh, hi. Yes. Let's just take it all in. It's on right now. There's actually live games on when we're up doing this program.
All right, let's bet.
Let's take it all in. Look, I bet on Shohei Ohtani to hit a home run.
There we go. That's getting in the spirit.
Here we go.
Yes.
Let's go. Come on.
Stay with us.
Yeah. Look, it's two games. They're on a regular season schedule. Have fun with it.
You know, I got to be honest. That's an upset for Bilotti. You're such a traditionalist. I thought you would hate this.
Well, it's better than watching the news.
But we have the news for you. We've got headlines. Dexter Henry's in with us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Good morning. We got some good things to talk about. In the first two games of the 2024 NCAA tournament, they are in the books. First four went down on Tuesday night, and in the first game, one school made history.
Here comes Howard. Towns steps back, goes to Hairston.
No
left
foul.
Wing three, left it short. Rebound Dockery with 5 seconds. Hairston great on three. He was bumped. Kick out Dockery, three on the way. No, it's short. Three chances for Howard, and that's the buzzer. Wagner survives.
That audio courtesy of Westwood One. How about the Wagner Seahawks? Staten Island School in New York made an improbable run to the big dance with a roster of seven healthy players. Now, after the 71-68 victory over Howard in the first four, the 16-seeded Seahawks will advance to play in the West region, where they're going to battle North Carolina on Thursday in Charlotte. And Wagner head coach Donald Copeland, he said it's not going to be easy trying to knock off UNC.
We're going to have to figure out a good schedule that gets these guys rest and as prepared as they can, because we also have a quick turnaround with an early game. So, and it couldn't be against a tougher opponent. You know, North Carolina, blue blood program, you know, you definitely want to be as prepared as you can to face those guys, especially in their own state, you know.
So now we got to talk about the second game of the first four that featured Colorado State.
Oof. Do we have
and Virginia.
To?
We got to. This was awful.
No, this was for all the people who didn't think that UVA should have made it into the field. You were rewarded last night because you were right. And UVA, when it's bad, it is so bad.
This
I can't imagine. I don't think there's another college basketball team that's like this.
No, not currently. Mm. I thought it was an awesome shirt that was in the stands from a Colorado State fan that said, "Virginia basketball is Iowa football." And it was in the green and gold, color scheme of the Colorado State fans. So I'm like, first of all, I'm like, wow, you got a Colorado State issued slight at Iowa football and Virginia basketball? Like, that's quite the feat there. It had the Under Armour logo and everything.
The bracket came out on Sunday. That's a quick turnaround on Tuesday to have that shirt printed.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't know if that was a team issue thing where they printed it out quickly, but that was the picture at the end of this game while I'm watching, you know, Colorado State 58, Virginia 32. Like, it was pathetic.
Yeah.
Absolutely pathetic. And they shouldn't have been in the field.
They should not have been. I'm with you, EJ. They shouldn't have been there. You mentioned it. Selected by the committee. People thought it was a controversial selection. And look, how bad was the offense? Well, pretty bad. So here's how it goes. Cavaliers star Reese Beekman sank two free throws with 9:20 left in the first half. Virginia would not score again until Beekman's jumper with 16:37 to play in the contest. The drought included 19 consecutive missed shots. That spanned 13:53 of game time, 59 minutes of real time, which also included a 20-minute halftime.
So UVA has not won a tournament game since they won it all.
Yeah.
And that was in 2018, 2019. So they lose the first ever one seed to lose to a 16, UMBC. We all remember that. Yep. The next year, they come back and win the tournament. They went out. They didn't make the tournament the year after they won. Sorry, that was COVID.
Yeah.
Pardon me. That was canceled. They lost in the first round in the 2020-2021. Didn't make the tournament the next year. Lost in the first round the next year and then just lost last night. Ouch.
This is who they are.
It's like Eli Manning of college basketball teams. You either win it all or you don't win a game.
Absolutely.
I love that. But this is who they are, though. This is their last four losses, 41 points against Virginia Tech, 44 points against North Carolina, 48 points against Duke, and then 65 points against NC State in an overtime game. It's like, what did we expect? Nope. And like, this was one of the few, actually, it's as bad as the game was last night. I actually watched this entire thing and I enjoyed it. I was thoroughly entertained. Because I love being right. And I love being accurate what I'm talking about. And
right.
I told everybody this was going to happen.
You're sweating the 66th team in the tournament here. I mean, what is it really at the end of the day, does it matter
yes, if one of your Big East teams have gotten it? Jabbar, and we didn't because well, these clowns got to the tournament.
But don't make, yeah, if we, just because we didn't see Seton Hall there, who cares? It's a play-in tournament,
no,
right?
Indiana State should have been in this field.
Well, that would have been awesome.
They would not have scored 42 points in a do-or-die tournament game. Absolutely not. And it's a shame that we had to see this, even though we've seen Virginia do this for a month.
I got to be honest. I put the play-in tournament, whatever you call it, the first four.
Yeah.
Right there with the opening day overseas.
In South Korea.
It is, because my wife asked me last night, in a panic, she said, oh my gosh, she has a work bracket, and she has the Maggie and Perloff bracket we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
And she said, oh my God, do I have to get my bracket in by Tuesday? I'm like, no one does it that way because these don't really count. You have to do it by Thursday. So what does that say? The fact that nobody even has to fill out their bracket with these games. They're not real games. To me, they're totally irrelevant. And I kind of don't like that about them.
But we do have teams that have advanced very far coming out of this game.
Actually, flip side, there's only been one year where a team who was in the first four didn't win a tournament game.
Right.
So it does help. I think it helps with the warm-up, get the nerves out a little bit, get used to the travel, whatever it is. But the first game was fun. It's just weird. Mm. You have one team with seven healthy players, and it was the other team who like couldn't find their legs in the last seconds to hit a three when they had three chances and three looks.
Yeah, I mean, I think these games are the opposite of fun. I'm not. Yeah, don't you guys want that? Whatever.
Yeah,
anyway,
we're never going to convince you on this one. What else?
I've never watched the first four game until last night. Everyone's like, you got to tune into this game, and then I watched 5 minutes of Virginia, and I was like, this is horrible.
Back to Nets Pels.
I understand why you tuned out. I understand. Now, for those wondering, Virginia did not win this game. They only scored 42 points. Colorado got 62. Putting things in perspective and to put a bow on this, Cavaliers, they had 42 total points in this game. As we mentioned, the Rams, they scored 40 of their 67 points in the second half.
They're asking in the chat, Pete, how much did you bet on this game? Would you be comfortable that Shohei was going to hit a home run? Daly thinks you put 35 cents on it. Are you comfortable sharing your betting slips with America?
$20
that Shohei's going to hit a home run?
Yeah.
Love it.
What kind of odds you get it?
I'm suddenly nervous for you.
Plus 225?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's odds. For a home run?
Yeah.
It's a season opener.
No, I'm just saying, like, I wouldn't think it'd
coming
be even higher. What are the odds of hitting a home run?
Shohei Ohtani is the most tremendous player ever to ever grace the field. That's why.
Plus 225 feels kind of, I would think it'd be higher. What are the odds of a guy hitting a home run in every game? That I don't think you're winning, Pete.
I don't think so either. I bet it. That's why.
Ohtani's numbers against you, Darvish. I'm sorry. Back to you, Dex.
All right, no problem. We're going to go over to the association. The Cleveland Cavaliers are going to be without their star guard, Donovan Mitchell. He will miss at least 1 week after having surgery Tuesday to repair a nasal fracture. And last night, the Joker, he moved his team closer to the top spot in the Western Conference. Nikola Jokic scored a game-high 35, hauled in 16 boards. Michael Porter Jr., 13 of his 26 in the fourth quarter. The Nuggets, they held off the Timberwolves 115-112. And with that victory, Denver moved within percentage points of idle Oklahoma City for the Western Conference lead. The Timberwolves, they drop a game back into third place. Also, Jalen Green, he had a 42-piece on Tuesday night. Rockets, they won their sixth straight game. They blasted the Wizards, who never win, 137 114. And last thing for me, guys, remember the docuseries Quarterback that dropped last summer on Netflix? Everybody remembers that, right?
I watched it.
You watch it? I didn't watch anything of that. Anybody else watch it?
I watched it. It was pretty good.
I watched the first few episodes. It was pretty good. Marcus Mariota disappeared at the end. It was just
like
kind of weird.
Life.
Like in real life, and he disappeared from the dock, too.
Huh. I just think that, to me, the takeaway was Kirk Cousins not doing football on Tuesday. That was weird.
Kirk Cousins has his routines. He will be at Barnes & Noble on a Tuesday. So he's going to have to find a new Barnes & Noble now in Atlanta.
Yeah, he'll have to find one there. Well, since you guys watched Quarterback, the creators of it, they're back with a new 8-episode series where pass catchers are going to take center stage. And it's called Receiver. And it's from NFL Films, Omar Productions, 2PM Productions. Peyton Manning is the executive producer of this project that will tell the stories of 5 NFL receivers throughout their 2023 season. Now, who are the 5 receivers? Devontae Adams, Justin Jefferson, George Kittle, Deebo Samuel, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Receiver.
Too bad they couldn't get any good receivers in that list. No. Jeez.
Who are you most interested in?
I know
you love Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Amon-Ra puts it all out there on his podcast, though. I don't know that I need to see him, but probably Amon-Ra St. Brown, because that St. Brown family is obviously insane and awesome. But Devontae Adams, like, he doesn't strike me as he does anything except go to the gym and go home. I don't know. Have you ever heard...
Be in Taco Bell commercials?
He's kind of serious. He's a very serious
guy. Right. Like that one. Justin Jefferson's fun. We've interviewed him a few times. He was great. To me, who's your guy?
I think the person who's probably going to stand out the most is probably Kittle. That's because he hams it up.
Yeah.
And he's basically doing WWE stuff and setting up for that probably second career. I think we're going to get some fun stuff from Deebo, because I think Deebo Samuel is the kind of guy who people love for reality TV shows because they can't help but be who they are. Like, I don't think Deebo can put up a front. Yeah. I think he's just going to be who he is, and those people are generally the best reality TV participants.
Now, I'm assuming did they chronicle them already, or did they chronicle them from last season? Because if it was...
From last season.
So if it was last season, I mean, Jettos would have been in my pick, but he was hurt all of last year. So I don't know how much we'll get from that, though. It might be interesting trying to see him get on the page with 4 different quarterbacks. Like, that would be kind of fun.
Introducing himself.
Hi, I'm Justin Jefferson, all-pro receiver, Josh Dobbs. Like, that maybe that part would be interesting, but if he's hurt, unless maybe we'll learn about how seriously hurt he was, because he missed a lot of time, maybe that would be interesting. But I agree with Maggie. I think Deebo would be quite fun. He was taking shots at, you know, CJ Gardner-Johnson. They had a whole thing back and forth midseason, so seeing that play out would be cool.
That's another guy. It's not like it's hard to get access to Debo's thoughts. He's sharing them left and right. Remember he came after my Eagles and Lane Johnson? But I have a question. So they filmed them last year, and they're just announcing it now. That's how this is? So they've been secretly filming these guys, and we had no idea?
Yeah, that's how they did it with Mahomes and with Kirk Cousins.
Right, we didn't remember at all. But, I mean, somebody must have noticed the camera crews following.
You would think so, right?
NFL Films, there's so many cameras and so much access. They might be able to just blend in. Like, they might be like, oh, I guess that makes sense now. You're being followed a lot.
But a lot of it's at their homes, too.
Which you wouldn't have access to.
Right. Patrick Mahomes, for example, last year I remember there was a part where he takes his kids to, like, an amusement park or something in Kansas City. Maybe it's like a petting zoo. I forgot what it was, but they shut down the whole place for him.
Really?
Yeah. Patrick Mahomes can't just go to, like, a random amusement park in Kansas City? That'd be such an awful experience for him. He'd be hounded by people asking for photos.
I think the receivers will have a little more access to things. I don't think you shut down things for Devontae Adams in Vegas.
Well, he has enough. Probably. So we're going to shut down Cirque du Soleil just for you. They come right to your living room.
I don't think the receivers are as big as stars by definition as a quarterback. Yeah. And Justin Jefferson, can he go out to dinner in Minnesota? Probably not. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't think so.
Back room?
I don't think so. Justin Jefferson?
Remember when Tim Tebow was here and he talked about how he could never, he hasn't been able to go out to dinner. He still can't go out to dinner.
Yeah.
I think the quarterbacks, you know, it's a little harder for them to live their lives. That's why I'm really curious about this. Like, what's it like to be a receiver? What the heck does Devontae Adams do for 7 days
Tuesday.
A week? I have no idea.
Are they going to do all positions with this? Like, are we going to do kickers?
I don't think you'd go past the skill positions, right?
Okay. Also, I don't think they would have even gone to receivers if more quarterbacks had said yes.
Yes, I agree with that.
That was a big issue.
That's
well.
More interesting.
Running backs might be good. Saquon?
Yeah, I can see that.
I love to see punters just to see the ratings or the views.
Thomas Morstead is a big social media guy.
Punters, maybe coming soon. But Receiver, set to drop this summer on Netflix. That's it for me, guys.
Dexter, thank you so much. Coming up, what's at stake today for some of the NFL's top prospects? We'll get to that next. It's Maggie and Perloff.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
CBS Sports Radio. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. The show's on pins and needles because Shohei Ohtani is up to bat in what is opening day right now in South Korea. And our own Pete Bilotti has a $20 bet whether Shohei will win an opening day home run. And he is now right. It's a 1-1 count with two outs in the top of the third inning against Yu Darvish.
Let's see if this guy's really a star.
I'm not allowed to do play-by-play. That's a little foreboding. But we'll let you know. Foul. Okay. Welcome back to the show. We'll let you know if Pete wins his bet. Perloff, two huge pro days going on around the country today. I know you're keeping an eye on
it. Well, potentially. So Ohio State and USC, there's a report Caleb Williams will throw, but Marvin Harrison Jr. is, as always, a total mystery. Will he do anything? There was a report from Ian Rappaport that he's not going to do anything physical. He was kind of a no-show at the Combine. He's a man of mystery. Unlikely that he'll run a 40 is what people are saying. So the 40 is less valuable now because they have the chips that measure actual game time speed for college football. So you wouldn't think they even run the 40. And Marvin Harrison had big numbers. But you're kidding yourself, Maggie Gray, if you think that NFL scouts who've come up in this industry don't still care about the 40, because you know that they draft off the 40. It's just a fact. And Malik Nabers, who's now rumored by many to be the number one receiver, if he runs a 4.3 next week at LSU and Marvin Harrison doesn't run, some teams are going to say, ooh, I don't know.
Okay,
and you know that's how it's going
to
work.
First off, Ohtani just singled to right. So, yeah. Pete, you're going to have to wait for the next AB. Pete has a $20 bet that Ohtani's going to homer in this game that's being played right now in South Korea. It's opening day. See, this is where I disagree with you, though, about the wide receivers. Like, you have Marvin Harrison Jr. This is where the draft process, like, kind of infuriates me a bit. We all watch Marvin Harrison. He caught passes from multiple different quarterbacks. He was amazing. He was, at times, felt like a one-man offense.
Yep.
He so separated himself in college football. So now, because he's not going to run a 40, or let's say he did run the 40, and say it came in, you know, a couple tenths of a second off of what Malik Nabers is. Ooh. Nabers is awesome, too. I'm not saying he's not. But this is where the draft process is. It can get too nitpicky. What did we see in the game? What did we see in the game? We saw Marvin Harrison being incredible. A couple tenths of a second on a 40 time, to me, is the least indicator of what kind of professional he's going to be.
Yeah, but NFL doesn't want these big guys anymore. And Marvin Harrison, he's not huge, but it's not the style of receiver they're going for, because you could be a little guy and the rules protect you. So I don't think Marvin Harrison, 10 years ago, Marvin Harrison would have been Calvin Johnson. Right. I'm not sure. Calvin Johnson is obviously unique, but I just not sure that's who the NFL, every team wants anymore. It's like Marvin Harrison did disappear at times, I think in large part because of the quarterback there in Ohio State.
Right.
But he wasn't consistently
awesome.
Yeah, Kyle
McCord was not that.
Yeah,
but again, like you go back to the Michigan game, I mean, he was making some huge plays in that game.
Yeah, no, he's fantastic. I was shocked when Daniel Jeremiah, the NFL Network guy, came out and said Nabers is number one on a lot of people's boards. Nabers can fly. I mean, don't you agree that wide receivers will move up if they run a fast 40? Brian Thomas Jr., the other receiver at LSU, just killed it at the combine. And now, at least in mock draft world, which is only mock draft world, doesn't mean anything. He's moving way up. Everybody's talking about him in the second half of the first round where you didn't really see it. He was kind of a drops guy at LSU, but now he's so fast, teams, coaches are like, ooh, give me that.
Okay, but what about the fastest guy to run, right? Well, before, was it?
John Ross, Texas. He went number nine.
John Ross went number nine, and what happened? That's a bad pick.
I understand, but the NFL scouts repeat the same mistakes over and over again.
Well, now it's the scouts and the GMs. I just think that if you've seen the difference also between just straight ahead 40 speed, and you've also seen the difference between game speed.
Yeah.
And to me, the game speed is so much more important. And it's also, think about it, when you get to the NFL, first of all these guys are fast. It's the, can you catch a pass and can you turn on the jets, right? And are you able to, get those yards after catch? Can you be a burner, but also do you have the sure hands? Can you be a contested catch guy? There's so much more that goes into this than just your 40 speed. And again, Marvin Harrison, he's got the tape. We said if he had come out last year, he could have been a top five pick. Why would that all of a sudden change?
Well, he's still going to be. I mean, listen, if Neighbors goes four, then Harrison goes five or six. It's not a huge difference. I still think Harrison goes higher, but I think it's a preference.
Right.
I think people view Malik Neighbors as the next Jamar Chase. And listen, they might view Marvin Harrison as closer to Mike Williams, who also went top 10, who's a big guy. Do you really want a possession receiver in the top 10? I don't think Marvin Harrison is that, but I'll bet you some teams are like, ooh, I don't know if I really want that. I want a guy who can be a possession receiver, but also can kill you down the field, and that might be Neighbors more than Harrison. I mean, also Harrison, he's big and tall and skinny. Is he going to be able to dominate physically like he did at college? There are questions. I was surprised. We were both surprised that all of a sudden Malik Neighbors is the guy because it was Marvin Harrison forever. But I think the speed is an issue. If Neighbors comes out and runs a 4.30 next week and Marvin Harrison doesn't run at all, I think there will be some GMs who will be like, I wonder.
Oh, my gosh. I hope that GM's not the GM of my team. I really do, because it would be so short-sighted. First of all, we know Neighbors is fast. You don't even need his 40 time. What is that going to do? We already know he's great. To me, again, it's all about the game speed. I wouldn't fool myself with the 40. This feels like a mistake, you're right, that was made 20 years ago that we should be smarter about now.
Absolutely, but 40 does show explosiveness. It's all these drills.
Sure.
I mean, look, Aaron Donald's retiring this week. He went out and killed the drills and all of a sudden woke up the NFL like, whoa, we should go back to this tape.
Yeah, but he was also coming out of Pitt and he was undersized. So it was kind of like, wow,
Yeah, Malik Neighbors is the same kind of thing. He was a little bit undersized.
Okay, but we have this great season that he just put together.
Aaron
right?
Donald had an amazing season.
I know. So what are we saying?
I think the testing can push you up. It's just a fact.
Okay, but a 40 time for a wide receiver, to me, that should be the last test.
Right. Well,
that matters.
40, there are only two positions to run the 40, the cornerback and the wide receiver. Right. Everybody else.
Yeah, the fact that the offensive linemen even run it just underscores how stupid it is.
Yeah, I think you're totally right in theory, and I absolutely agree with you, but I think reality is that teams care about the 40, especially the wide receivers and the corners. And because the fact that we all know the wide receiver, we vaguely know what the wide receivers ran. Garrett Wilson was ridiculously fast. So this is a thing. It does seem like there is some consistency with fast 40s and being a good wide receiver, obviously.
Well, but not all, because the guy who ran the fastest one was not good.
Yeah, and of course, Jerry Rice ran a 4.6, but that was a long time ago.
Right. Jerry Rice ran a 4.6. It's so meaningless. Let's go to Andrew. He's in Pittsburgh, wants to talk about wide receivers. Andrew, how are you?
Hey, Maggie Perloff. Good morning. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. What's on your mind?
Hey, yeah. A little bit kind of what Perloff was saying about the NFL not wanting big wide receivers. That may be the case with the emergence of Tyreek Hill and, the dominance that he showed. But from a former quarterback's perspective, if you think of baseball, you think of that strike zone. The bigger the wide receiver is, the bigger your strike zone is for a quarterback. You know what I mean? When you're throwing that pass, you have such a wider range of where you can put the ball, and you know that guy's going to be able to go up and get it, especially over top of the DB or something like that.
But, Andrew, let me ask you a question. I'll give you a choice between peak Devontae Adams or peak Tyreek Hill, who's not big. Who would you take?
If I was playing quarterback, my resume is not impressive, but I would definitely take Devontae Adams.
See, I would take Tyreek Hill, but just fling it downfield and know he's 10 yards past the DB. I think that's more the style now. Look at last year, Quentin Johnson, big guy out of TCU, That was a wrong pick. Zay Flowers is way better.
I get your long range threat, but what about in the red zone when you have to throw the ball 10 yards? You know what I mean? It's just you have so many more options when you have a big guy to throw it to as opposed to, you know, something smaller.
Tyreek Hill's pretty good in the red zone too.
Fly patterns or swing routes.
Yeah, Andrew, thank you. It's a great point. I think it also depends on what kind of quarterback you have.
I was going to say, I think I maybe agree with Andrew a little bit is a guy like Marvin Harrison or a bigger receiver, they can make a bad quarterback or bad throws catchable. They can make those plays that a smaller guy just won't. Like, to be a Tyreek Hill, how many times do we see Tua Tagovailoa have Tyreek Hill wide open, underthrown by 10 yards, and you're like, or have touchdowns that were just 15-yard gains because he underthrew them? Like, I think there is
a little bit of fair to Tua. Tua's pretty good chemistry with Tyreek Hill.
No, but there were times. No, he was awesome. But there were times where they definitely. I think there's a little more precision needed to maximize a speed guy than there is a contested catch guy. It just by definition, because contested catch guys can be covered and you can still make completions.
I think Tyreek Hill just fling it down the field. It's a lot easier. Arm strength.
It doesn't matter.
Well, Tyreek Hill had his best season with Tua, so you can't say that he didn't maximize him. But look at the draft.
Not all those were 20-plus yards, you know, air yards. Right. You're talking about.
Tyreek
Hill's yards after the catch, it's like that's a huge part of it.
Yep. Tua would always find him behind the DBs, and I always would say, how can you let him back there? I kind of disagree. I think Tyreek Hill's better with Tua than he even was with Mahomes. He almost had 2,000 yards. He was on the pace to break the record. But look at the guys who've come in recently. Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Jamar Chase, Garrett Wilson, Olave, all the good young receivers are small. And Drake London has done nothing. So I think small is the in thing right now.
Speaking of wide receivers, got a little news yesterday that had us all scratching our heads. We'll get to that next. Maggie and Perloff, CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.